We're gonna have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny K.
Christmas Carol Catastrophes. The oddest Christmas songs to ever be unleashed on an unsuspecting public.
They'll sing and they'll sing and they'll sing, 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 sing.
Hey everybody, how about a Christmas carol?
Fire / Santa Dog by The Residents.
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you...
I'm Eric Paul Johnson.
And I'm Eric Winsenson.
And this week, Eric picked the song. And I don't know if you want to tell the story that proves your dedication to this band and also shows what a wonderful wife you have before we get into the song.
So, back in high school, a friend of mine, a very nice-looking tall blonde friend of mine, gave me her copy of The Residents radio show, second issue with the blue cover. And it's a cassette, basically, of them doing like a fake radio show back in about 78, where they're introducing the Baby Fingers EP. And one of the things that is on it is a medley of the songs from the single Santa Dog, which at the time they're saying it's going for about $25 now and becoming a collector's item. Well, I had been looking for the thing forever. There was only about 250 of those made, I believe. Most of them were handed out to friends of the residents. This was their first actual vinyl release after doing a number of reel-to-reel tapes and demos that they kept for themselves or sent to Warner Brothers and got rejected. So I had a decades-long search for it, which culminated a few years ago, and finally finding a copy that had the cover, because most of the ones you find are not with the cover. Found one with a cover that was not ripped up, and in very good condition, for around just a little bit over $2,000.
What?
It's a little bit more than what it's actually book value, but there are certain things where book value doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. So I was able to go ahead and finally purchase it after asking permission. Yeah, two things in the last few years I've asked permission for: my cylinder player and the Residents single. Yeah, so that was a once-in-a-lifetime purchase. There is a lot of expensive Residents stuff that goes about $500 to $800 from their early days that were handmade little releases, but that was one of the big ones.
And when you said, "Honey, can I spend $2,000 on a 45? She didn't say, "Yes, and you can spend all the time you want with that because I'm walking out the door."
No, she did not. She understood how important that was for me to get. And it didn't matter how much it was at the it would have mattered if it was more than that, because then it would have just been ridiculous. But for me, it didn't matter that it was just that it was a bit over what normally they have gone for in the past, because it's never leaving my collection until I leave the face of the earth. So,
yeah, that's the sign of a wonderful wife. She does not step on your joy and say, "No, don't do that." She gets it. She understands it. Put that woman in chains and keep her for the rest of your life. Or the rest of her life, whichever happens first.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So, I did not play a snippet of this song at the beginning, as I usually do, or we usually will, since this is only the second episode, because Eric is a big Residents fan and informed me that they've done about 637 versions of this song. So it's not like I could just pick, that's the one that we will play for people to understand what we're talking about. So we're going to go over only a few of them. We'll play the snippets of the song when we get to that version of that song. I came across four versions on Apple Music. I'm going to go in chronological order. First one that comes up is Fire, Santa Dog. And I have to try not to say it without sounding like Beavis. Fire!
Santa Dog's at Jesus' feet, Santa Dog's at Jesus' feet, Santa Dog's at Jesus' feet, there's no presence in the future.
In the future.
Flitting in the slitting sin of snowness in the slivs. Flitting in the slitting sin of snowness in the slivs. Sleeping in the sleeting scene, slowly sip sleeves.
It came out in 1972. See, I don't know much about The Residents. Here's what I know about The Residents. Winsenson likes them a lot. He's made this known early on when I met him back in like 1991. But it's been rare. There's been occasional times when I've heard a Residents song on Dr. Demento or a Residents compilation. Since there's been some stuff that they've done that I don't really know if you could call it a song or music exactly. Some things I've heard kind of reminds me of Revolution Number 9, but again, you've only heard like a tiny little bit of The Residents. So it probably shouldn't come as a surprise that when I say that this song right here, Fire, Santa Dog, 1972, to me it sounds like an alternative band from like the early 80s or mid 80s, and it's time for their fan club Christmas record to go out, and instead of picking a standard Christmas song and doing it in their own version, they make up an original Christmas song and kind of just go completely off the rails of what their normal sound is and do something goofy and weird and odd. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of alternative bands in the 80s crib their sound from The Residents, because they seem like the obscure avant-garde band that people like Michael Stipe or take your pick of alternative band from the early 80s would definitely have a really great knowledge about The Residents.
Well, a number of them know who it is. There's only one major band from that time period that you can really hear the influence, and that's Primus.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Early 90s, this sort of sounds like if an alt band got goofy for their Christmas single.
Yeah. No, in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, when Primus is up there performing, Les Claypool's actually wearing a Resident shirt.
So, that's right.
During the Battle of the Band sequence.
Yeah.
Primus was heavily influenced. Les Claypool's vocals often are similar to the vocals on the Residents records.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he tries to make himself sound a little bit like the Residents singer, which has that Louisiana twang to it. So the story behind Fire and the reason it's called Fire is the original Santa Dog single was made to look like a Christmas card from an insurance company. So it had four songs on it, each one supposedly from a different band name. I guess one of the band names, it turns out, the Delta Nudes, was one that the group actually used occasionally for concerts. And actually took a promotional picture for that, which cannot be shown on... Basically a bunch of naked hippie guys.
Yeah. They had to go with guys. They couldn't go with girls.
No, they didn't go with girls. Peggy Honeydew was kind of a hanger-on with the band at the time and part of the movie that they were making. But no, she was not in that picture. So at this time, they had made a number of tapes. They had sent two of them to Warner Brothers. The first one ended up being called the Warner Brothers album because it got rejected, and that gave them their name because they didn't put the band name on it, so it came back as Residents.
Oh.
And the reason they sent it to Warner Brothers is because they figured, well, they signed Captain Beefheart, they'll sign anything. But it came back. Their next one was called Baby Sex. Yeah, there's another cover we can't, that when they finally released that officially, yeah, that had a black cover on it. 60s and 70s, people. 60s and 70s.
People were way out back then.
And drugs. And
yeah, that too.
And pushing social boundaries and things that, thank God, are not being pushed anymore. But that was also sent over there and rejected. So finally they decided to press their own record. And that was the Santa Dog single, which was a Christmas release for 1972. It became the official date that the Residents existed from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's such an important thing, is because that's where they had been performing together, working together since about 69, but 72 is the official start of the band. And what they did with this is they gave it to their friends. They printed about 250 copies. They were all hand silk screened. Unfortunately, it got sealed. The glue had a problem, so all the original copies will have glue stains on them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were put together before the silk screening was dried, so that's why you get a lot of them that are ripped up, because it's a gatefold cover, so once you opened it, if it didn't dry right, then it destroyed the cover.
Right.
The inside of the cover.
Right.
And that's why I was so glad to find the one I had. They had numbering on them, but the numbers made no sense. They were hand-signed, hand-numbered.
Mm.
And it was the first release of their new independent record label, Ralph Records. So what they did with this is the ones they didn't give to their friends, they initially sent out to people. They sent one to Frank Zappa. I don't remember if that got returned or they just never heard back from him. But the one they used for the 1999 compilation Refused, which had the original, a number of their remakes of Santa Dog from 78 through 99, as well as some new songs. The cover they used for that was the one they sent to Richard Nixon. And it came back with Refused on it. Basically, the White House went, what the hell is this? And
yeah, I'm sure.
Now, once again, hippies, 1972, bug Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
This was before all of a sudden the Secret Service would show up at your door for sending even the least little thing.
Right.
Now, what happened then is that in a couple more years, they released their first album, Meet the Residents, which basically was a cover defacing the Beatles' Meet the Beatles album, with Ringo Starfish and Paul McCrawfish, et cetera, et cetera. So they released that, and Ralph Records became kind of a mail-order thing as well, because no internet, and really hard getting some of the stuff into stores outside of San Francisco and Portland and everything from the West Coast. So they had mail-order where they could get stuff, and so they sold the rest of the Santa Dog stuff off through mail-order early in the 70s, and it became extremely collectible. One of the things about the Residents is that nobody's supposed to know who they are. There has been one original member that came forth before he died, and that was Hardy Fox. So he's going to be the only person, other than maybe some other people that are currently with the band, that I'll mention by name. Otherwise, even though I know who they are, I'm still not going to mention names.
Right.
So Hardy Fox, I believe, is the vocalist on this. The other vocalist has a very, very pronounced southern voice and everything. Hardy had a slight singing voice where he could pull it off occasionally. Where the other one, yeah, well, it works for the Residents. It probably wouldn't work for much else. So he's singing on this, and this became kind of like a trademark for where they were at a time in their career. And the original, I kind of like, just because what you said, it doesn't sound like a lot of Residents stuff. At this particular time, they were highly influenced by Captain Beefheart and early Frank Zappa albums, which means more sound collage and just stuff going into things. Some of the songs were songs, some of the songs were not. They used a lot of early sampling. For instance, within a couple years, they had a single out called The Beatles Play the Residents and The Residents Play the Beatles. The Residents Playing the Beatles was basically a bunch of Beatles songs thrown together with an interview from John Lennon popping in and out called Beyond the Valley of a Day in the Life, where they did their version of Flying on the Back, which was from Magical Mystery Tour.
I'm curious to hear that.
That one's actually more song structured, but yeah. They did a lot of early sampling. They didn't use synthesizers until, I think, probably about 76. Well, actually, probably about 77 or so. Otherwise, they just did tape loops and everything. So this song is built up of some playing that they're actually doing. They knew a lot of people who could play, so they often hired people. Snakefinger Lithman, who is a British guitarist, often worked with them. So a lot of the times you hear actual real guitar, and a lot of their songs is him. I don't remember if he's on this on the acoustic part or not. I know parts of the song were sampled from other artists. I'd have to look up who. But I think the acoustic part was them, the drumming was them, and then, of course, the vocals. And then, of course, there's a lot of other weird sounds of just tape effects and slowing things down, and or what they did at one time, which is just throw stuff down the stairs to see how it sounds.
Yeah, there's a noise here that reminds me of a noise that was on Intro to the Outro by the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
Especially flown in for us, a Sessions Gorilla on Vox Humana.
How do you do, Mr. Sponsor? How do you do? Here's the time for a commercial for you. We'd be glad to put it in if you'll get up the tin. How do you do, Mr. Sponsor? How do you do? Whoa, sponsor!
Many a pipe smoking man, there is one symbol of Christmas almost as familiar as the holly wreath and the evergreen tree itself. I mean that big, cheery, pleasure-filled package of Prince Albert smoking tobacco with the bright Christmas band. Yes, many a Merry Christmas has been made merrier still by that pound or half-pound package of smoking joy. Rich, full, yet mild flavor, aged in the wood aroma, the famous crimp cut for firm packing, easy drawing, and even burning. And then, too, Prince Albert is so tongue-gentle thanks to its no-bite treatment. Look at that Christmas list of yours again. There's many a man's name on it, beside which you'll want to write Prince Albert.
May the spirit of Christmas and the holidays be with you, your friends, and your family. From the spirit of New England, WBC.
So the next one, going in chronological order, is Santa Dog 78, which came out in 1978. It's funny, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you thought the last one was weird, it's The Residents, so they got weirder. I think this one actually fits right in with the premise of this podcast, Christmas Carol Catastrophes. Not because it's a disaster, it fits the requirement of what was that? It's very weird. It's kind of weird. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it's kind of funny to hear the high-pitched little Santas. Yeah, I don't quite know where to go with this one. Except, this is weird. This is unusual. This is very interesting music, Marty.
It's not exactly a beloved version by Residents fans. It's a single that they released in Christmas of 78. Now, here's kind of the story about this time. To start off, the lyrics to the song. The main lyrics to the song are, Santa Dog's a Jesus fetus. Has no presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Has no presence, P-R-E-Z-E-N-T-S, in the future. That's basically the words, and then the rest of it, some of it sounds like nonsense because some of it is.
Yeah.
The Residents at the time, from 72 into about the late 70s, the way they described it is that there was a Bavarian avant-garde artist named Ensenada that they had made friends with, and he had come up with this entire idea of, since he didn't speak English very well, that words didn't have to actually make the sense, they just had to sound right for the song.
He's not wrong. If I hear words that actually grab my ear and make me pay attention to the rest of the lyrics, yeah, they matter. But for the most part, I don't know, lyrics just seem like part of the music. There are a lot of songs where lyrics are there just because, well, I gotta put lyrics in here. So really, you could put anything in there. And if the tune is catchy enough, then I don't care what you're singing. Well, for the most part.
Yeah, it was called the Theory of Phonetic Organization. And Sonata to them was always somebody real, but, you take a lot of Residents' history stuff with a grain of salt. They make things up. even though John Anderson used about the same theory, I think, with a lot of his lyrics in Yes. You actually read a lot of Yes lyrics, and you're just sitting there going, what? Especially since you know he didn't do a whole lot of really bad drugs. You're sitting there just going, huh.
Okay.
It's just him singing about fairies and whatever. And but that was the main thing behind the Residents at the time. Now, Ensenada comes into this because Ensenada supposedly disappeared for a good portion of the 70s and then showed back up in about 77 with a jar of Arctic Air.
Yeah.
Encouraging them to do the album Eskimo. I know, all the alarm bells just went off. We're getting canceled and everything. It was a perfectly accepted term back then. So the residents decided to make their own instruments and make an album called Eskimo, using a fake language and making up stories about Arctic culture. But the whole point was about modern society and American society destroying Native cultures and appropriating Native cultures for their own uses. So before everybody freaks out, that was the entire point of it. And it's a very interesting album that's basically not very musical, but you have to actually read the liner notes along with it because the stories and the liner notes go with the music. The reason I mention all that is because they took forever to make it. The album didn't come out until 79. The Cryptic Corporation, which was the financial management portion of Ralph Records, wanted something out, so they released a few things. The band, while doing this, recorded the Duckstab EP, recorded another EP called Buster and Glenn, which they put together on one album, even though the Duckstab did come out as a 7-inch EP. And then they released Not Available, which was their actual second album, but had been made not available because they recorded it, threw it in a safe, and said they were never releasing it until they forgot about it. Since management released it, they said that that wasn't a violation of what they were doing because they didn't make the decision.
Right.
So Santa Dog 78 is basically in line with the Duckstab and Buster and Glenn stuff, which means that they had stopped doing long song collages and more progressive stuff and had started cutting it down to songs that were pop song length. And that's where most of their best stuff actually comes from. A lot of people know. Unfortunately, Santa Dog 78, even though it's an example of where they were at the time, it's not an example of their best stuff from the time. They just kind of threw it together, threw it out as kind of like a Christmas present on their mail order. And of course, it wasn't very expensive back then. So it was basically, here's a little fan thing. So basically, it's what you said about the original, about an alternative band throwing something out to their fans.
Right, for their Christmas fan club record, right.
Yep. And you mentioned REM. REM did that a lot.
Oh, they did, yeah.
And those records are now worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I have a whole bunch of MP3s. Unfortunately, I don't have any of the actual singles they put out.
Have last-minute Christmas chores got you in a whirl? Now look, Mother, even though you don't get home until just before supper time, here's the quick, easy way to give your family swell food that satisfies husky appetites. Serve baked Spam, S-P-A-M. And baking is easy when you serve Spam. All you do is open a can of Spam, stud it with cloves, and slip it into the oven. The easy recipe is right on the label. In just a few minutes, you'll have a delicious main course. Spam is tender, juicy meat with extra goodness and flavor because Spam is a perfect combination of pork shoulder meat and ham meat. Tired appetites perk up with Spam on the table, and tired mothers like it because Spam is so easy to serve. Tomorrow, be sure your shopping list includes S-P-A-M Spam.
6238503375. Call now.
Hello there, Mr. Kringle. Ting-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.
Got something to say about the song, the podcast, or have a bad Christmas memory to share? Then leave a message on the voicemail, and if we get enough messages, we'll play and respond to them in the post-Christmas wrap-up episode. You got 3 minutes before it cuts you off.
Come on, children. Santa Claus is on the phone.
Hark! The music fills the air. Holiday cheer from WQAM.
Now we're jumping ahead about 20 years.
Right. They did an 84. The 84 was never finished and released until it was on the Refused compilation. 88, they released on a CD. And then there was 92, which was also released on a CD single. But we're going to jump all the way to 99 because that's where it gets important again.
Fire 99 / Santa Dog Second Millennium is next up on the list of ones that I heard, going in chronological order.
Dogs are Jesus feeders. Santa dogs are Jesus feeders. Has no presence in the future. In the future. succeeding is the stumble of a bee. Fleeting and receding is a bird turned in a tree. Fleeting and receding is a bubble made of me. Fleeting and receding are the memories of me.
To me, this sounds like something that could have been in A Nightmare Before Christmas. It's got that Tim Burton, Danny Elfman sort of sound to it. Those little high voices singing Santa Dog, Santa Dog. I can picture Lock, Stock, and Barrel singing that. And it's 10 minutes long, so honestly, it's almost like a kind of creepy Christmas kind of movie. The first part, it's, I don't know, a minute something. And then it goes into something else, which is creepier and different. They go into Summertime, the old song that Sidney Bechet did, and a lot of people have done, and then it goes into some sort of moody, jazzy, quiet part near the end where, I mean, I could almost picture a sad Oogie Boogie singing it. It's very Nightmare Before Christmassy for me.
Yeah, it was basically made for a compilation that was released by Ralph America. At the time, they were releasing a number of limited releases because, well, at this point, a lot of Resident stuff had become collectible. They were getting very frustrated because they were putting out music and barely making any money, where down the road, their stuff was worth tons of money on the collector's market, so they didn't see any of it. So they decided, it's time that we start actually making some money off of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So 1999 was coming up. Of course, it was going to be 2000. So they released a number of different things that year, but one of these was Refused, which had the cover of the Santa Dog single that they had sent to Nixon with the Refused stamp on it. So they reproduced that, and they'd made some new songs, and also compiled all the previous Santa Dog versions. Of course, the original full EPs on there, too. And the Residents had also majorly changed their sound by this point. This is a little bit over two decades down the line. Two members of the original band had left back in the 80s. So basically, the core band from the original was Hardy Fox and the singer. Hardy Fox is the one responsible for the music. He no longer provided vocals. At this point, I think Nolan Clark had joined on guitar. It's known that he's the guitarist currently. He's still with them. If there are female vocals, then it's Molly Harvey. This was shortly after they released the album Wormwood, Curious Stories from the Bible. Yeah, and she performed on the tour and a little bit on the album too, even though they had other female vocalists on there too. But it was a band that had completely changed. By then, they actually knew how to play stuff.
Yeah.
Too. So, basically by then, Molly could... Well, Joy will object to this, but Molly can kind of sing.
Joy is Winsenson's wife.
And then they hired other members from different bands. I know somebody who used to play with Captain Beefheart was actually in the band, I don't know at this point, but later on in the 2000s. So they actually have real musicians kind of filtering in and out. And by now, Hardy's a real musician as well. That's where you get all that dark feeling from and that whole jazzy part. He knew what he was doing. He started throwing in a lot of that. And later on throughout the 2000s, some of it became a bit more ambient music and a lot of different things. But this kind of says where they are and kind of interprets where they're going at the time.
Right.
Now, the thing is about the Refused, 1,333 copies of Refused were made, and it was released in 1999, so there's a little hidden message there. If you subtract 1,333 from 1999, you get 666. They were playing around with this whole apocalypse millennium thing and all that, because remember, the world was about to end not too long after this was released.
Of course, in 2000, because somebody didn't have the foresight to think that maybe computers might exist beyond 1999. So when it hits 2000, all the computers are going to flip over and they're all going to think it's 1900, and then computers will collapse and so will society. And of course, that didn't happen.
Yeah, because computer programmers had been fixing it since probably about 1995.
Yeah.
Because they went, oh, this might be a problem. Maybe we should fix it before 1999, which is opposite of most human thinking.
Yeah, among most of the public, yeah, they were freaking out. I was thinking, there are people smarter than me who are working on this who don't want to see the world collapse. So I'm not going to worry too much about it.
Yeah, and if that happens, you can't play Duke Nukem, and so...
Yeah. I can't spend 3 hours downloading a picture of porn.
That's true. Without the internet, you'd have to go back to magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going and finding sticky magazines out in the forest, and...
So we're jumping ahead a year, thank God.
Yep. Away from sticky magazines,
yes,
out in the forest.
Yes. To Santa Dog, I told you people this podcast wasn't going to be all Christmas and syrupy. You were warned.
Yes.
We're jumping ahead to Santa Dog for
Gamelan.
Gamelan Orchestra. I've listened to, this one is the most Christmassiest. It's almost a kind of creepy Christmas, though. Like, you're kind of lost in a haunted house. It's got the vibes. Not haunted vibes. I mean, like, version of xylophone vibes. And they're kind of echoey, and it sort of has instruments that you would hear on a Christmas song, except I think a lot of the Christmassy spirit is stripped away, and it's just haunted vibraphones. So it's Christmassy, but maybe it's a haunted Halloween Christmassy.
Gamelan is basically played with percussive instruments. It's a type of music that originated in Indonesia, mainly on Java and Bali and a number of other places. So the reason they were using it is because during their tour for Wormwood in 2000, one of the songs they did... They didn't do it on the way on the album, but they decided to incorporate gamelan music as a version of one of the songs from the album when they performed it. Because the entire performance was performing different stories from the Bible, basically the most violent ones from the Old Testament.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, no, one of the yeah. One of the most musical ones, it sounds like, actually on the album, it sounds like a pop song. It's called Burn Baby Burn. And it's about a quick story in there about a guy who says he'll sacrifice his daughter to God if he wins a battle. So he wins a battle,
okay.
So he burns his daughter to death for God.
Uh-huh.
And so they made kind of a pop song out of that.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
I'm going to die with no tears in my eyes because God digs my daddy, is the lyrics to it.
I love that. There are 100 kajillion billion pop songs, and the lyrics to most of them are just insipid, vapid, I love you, you love me. Isn't everything just wonderful and grand? So it'd be great to hear a pop song about a guy's, and it's not a Christian rock song, course, I don't know if Christian Rock would even touch that subject, of a guy burning his daughter alive because God told him to. And the daughter is like, this is going to be great.
Exactly. So they decided to do a number of songs over 2000 because they were starting to take advantage of MP3s and the internet and downloads and everything, because they always like to be on the cutting edge of technology. So in this particular case, they did a series of songs per month that you could download. And then they released it on an album called .com. And this was one of the ones that they could do, that they decided to do, was Gamelin version of Santa Dog. I really like it. I really like this version. Number one, they don't drag it out forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perk.
They keep it to where it was, and the original rhythm to it actually fits the type of music.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually hired people who could play this stuff to do it. So, yeah, because I remember they actually had people come up on stage who knew how to play the percussive instruments and everything to do it for the song. Other than the original, I'd say that's my favorite version of it, because that's the most interesting version.
Right.
They have done a number of other versions since then, all the way up to a 2022 one, which I do have. Most of these I have. It's just that they are either just basically saying this is where we are now, or it's just kind of like a fan thing. I have not listened to the new one yet because I've got tons of stuff to listen to, but it's on a single from Cherry Red Records. You can order the single from them. I think there's still plenty left. It's a 7-inch single. But I would suggest, if you're really interested in hearing a lot of this, they did release an entire Santa Dog album just recently. I don't remember how limited that was. There's probably still plenty of copies that can be found. It had a lot of the more recent versions on it, too. But some of the stuff can be downloaded officially from different places. Some of it's on Spotify. The residents are very open about putting their stuff on Spotify and Apple and everything, so you don't have to go breaking the bank to hear a lot of this stuff. You just have to go online and listen. It's unlike some bands and some artists, Wendy Carlos, who seem to think that any of their music should never be heard ever again.
And here we are with a station break.
A station break is the time we take
to tell you your tune to
WDGY.
Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Kodak suggests a give and take Christmas.
Give Kodak gifts for Christmas. Take pictures, save the fun. And share your Merry Christmas days with everyone. Give Kodak gifts for Christmas. Take all the Christmas cheer. To live again, enjoy again, year after year. Give Kodak gifts for Christmas. Take pictures all year through. To give a Kodak gift, the merriest Christmas thing to do.
I'm sure all of us enjoy having Christmas pictures. So this year, why don't you enjoy a give and take Christmas? Give a Kodak gift to those you love so they can take pictures they'll always treasure. It's a good way to make this the happiest holiday season you'll ever remember.
Have a real Chicago Christmas with WLS.
This is the first time I've ever actually listened to The Residents. Eric's mentioned them, and I've clipped little snippets for the ELO podcast when he brings them up. I know they've been on Dr. Demento, but usually when I'm listening to music, I'm doing other things, and it's there. I heard it. It didn't fully sink in, but I heard it. So this is the first time I've actually listened to anything from The Residents, and I liked all four versions of this song. I even liked the weird one. I thought that was pretty great. I don't think any of these are going to be put on my Christmas list, just because, I mean, maybe the last one there with the Gamelin Orchestra, but that's a big maybe.
The only two I have on my Christmas playlist when I play Christmas music in December are the original and the Gamelin. Those are the only two versions that I have as possibilities right. for my radio show.
I mean, I'm not against weird. I like weird. These songs that are coming up on future episodes, I have them, and they're on my Christmas playlist. But I don't know if maybe this crosses a weird line where it takes me out of whatever Christmas vibe some of these other songs have, and then it's like, oh my god, what alternate astral plane did I just step into that is on Christmassy? I would put them on my regular playlist and just have them pop up when I play random. But as for Christmassy, they don't make me feel Christmassy. And I think really that's the ultimate decision of what gets put on my Christmas playlist, especially at this point when I have, I don't know, 2,500 songs and I gotta listen to all of them in 1 month and at some point get some sleep and go out and do things too. So I feel like I'm already cramming in a lot of Christmas music to listen to in a certain month. So now I have to be extra, extra picky about what makes me feel Christmassy when I hear it. These don't, but I like them. I will listen to them. I will add them to playlists. Just not the Christmas one.
Yeah. Now I'll listen to Fire anytime, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I agree. I don't think they were really meant to be Christmassy.
Yeah.
Just that sense of Santa in it. Because that was also part of the point. Santa Dog is an anagram for Satan God and everything. So it had more to than just being Christmassy. Because, like I said, the rest of the original has some dialogue from it that was supposed to go into their movie Wildness Fats, which never got released. Some of it's a lot stranger. Basically, it sounds like they did on their tapes.
Right.
And Fire was the only really Christmas thing on it. And I don't, yeah, other than having Santa in it, yeah. It's not exactly the most Christmassy thing. Now, if you do want something that's Christmassy from The Residents, and I believe it's available on Spotify and download now, even though it was originally a limited release as well. I think it was 2001? 12 Days of Brumalia? Okay. Originally, it was all downloaded. They released it throughout December. They basically made an entire Christmas album. Brumalia was a pagan holiday, of course, but basically what they do is they do their usual Residents thing of throwing together a whole bunch of different Christmas songs, mixing them up with current early 2000s electronic dance beats and stuff like that, and other residential stuff where it sounds really weird. But it's a lot more Christmassy than this,
right?
Really. I still wouldn't say it's my favorite album by them, but it's interesting.
Christmas Carol Catastrophes is a production of Radio Trolla Entertainment, Assorted Deli Meats Amalgamated. Our theme song was written and recorded by Stephen St. John. Send us an email at christmascatastrophes@gmail.com. Help spread the word by sharing the link on your social networking sites and rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts. Next week, I found the brains of Santa Claus.
I wish you plenty of fun. A happy Christmas to all, and to all, good night. Good night. Good night.